The Game Schooler Podcast is a weekly audio show that highlights the educational value of tabletop gaming. In this week's episode, we'll cover SOS Dino, our recommended game of the week, examine teaching other people's kids versus teaching your own kids.
Good luck.
Discuss analysis paralysis in the school of gaming and wrap it up with a high five challenge.
Intro music!
Welcome to the Game Schooler Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Kotecki, along with my co-host, Dr. Michael McCabe. How's it going, Michael?
Man, doing great, Doug. Great to be on the pod here. How are you?
Good. I like how you acted like you're regularly not on the pod, as if it's a special occasion to be here.
It's a highlight of the week, man. Love getting together and talking games and learning and school and family. Let's get after it here.
All right. Anything you play this week?
So I believe this is
that's a sigh of disappointment.
Episode 15, right?
Yep.
And in my notes, I have this week was known as All Work Week. No games played! So it was one of those weeks where, and it happens, right? We both have day jobs and we both have busy times of the year. And this is one of those very busy times of the year. I relied on Netflix to be my babysitter. I have a lot of shame and embarrassment as I say that so that I could continue to get work done. But for the day job, it was just a big, big week of work. So last night I was faced with a decision, haircut or board games. Man,
you look dapper, so I know what you did.
Decision. Had to go see Cesar, sit in the chair and get lined up. I'm regretting the decision now a little bit. I feel good. But no, this is the first week since we've started the show where I haven't played any board games. Very disappointed in myself.
Crying face emoji.
In my family. More than
yeah, you
myself.
Really let everybody down yeah. And all our listeners. So.
How about you, man?
We played a lot of stuff this week, and I'm going to save some of it until next week. That's how much I played. But one of the things I wanted to highlight is, one, I played SOS Dino, the recommended game of the week this week. I also played another game by the same company, Loki, called Farmini or Farmini. I'm not sure exactly what the title is. But they are a company that specializes in kids' games that are teaching basic mechanisms and concepts for board gaming in general.
Yeah.
So they're taking one game and putting basic ideas. Like Farmini is about building a little farm, and it's kind of tile placement and a little bit of drafting, but that's about it. A little bit of set collection, but just very basic mechanics to help grow gamers.
Cool.
So that was a good one. We played.
You
that.
Liked it?
Yeah. I mean, it's not one that, you know, it's not a brain burner.
Yeah.
You know, but the kids enjoyed it, and there's a little bit of a play factor after the game to just let them set up and play with the components. And then we played a really fun one last night. I don't even know if you're familiar with this one, and I hesitate to even call it a game, is Happy Salmon.
Oh, yeah. Yep, and I'm familiar with it. I haven't played it, but I know
the game.
We
played Happy Salmon and Funky Chicken, which are offshoots of the same game.
Why don't you consider Happy Salmon a game?
I think it's more of an activity.
Ah.
It's a fun activity. But in Happy Salmon, for example, you have a stack of, I think, 12 cards that you flip over your deck, and the top card on it, you're basically shouting out, it's like high five or pound it or a Happy Salmon, like little handshake things that you're trying to do and get somebody else at the table to have that card. So I'd be yelling out, high five, high five, high five, until somebody else has a high five, and then you give them a high five, and then you get to get rid of that card.
That sounds like a great icebreaker, like at a corporate event or a camp.
Yes.
We're going to play Happy Salmon. This is how you're going to get to know each other.
Yeah, especially when do you know what a Happy Salmon handshake is?
Yeah.
Yeah, half. No, you slap your arms together.
Oh,
like
that's not
fish.
What I thought it was.
No, and it is. What a great way to get to know somebody.
That looked very awkward, Douglas.
Slapping arms like a dead fish. And
that so would actually be a live fish. A dead fish would just not move.
You're very accurate.
All right. Victory points off the start.
So that was fun. The kids enjoyed that one.
Good.
And, I mean, I dominated.
Of course you
naturally,
did.
Naturally. But I felt no pride in it.
Okay. So a lot of family games, huh?
Yeah. So it's a good week.
Good.
All right. Unless there's anything else.
Nope. Nothing to clean up from last week. I don't have anything else. Let's jump right in.
Although, I do want to... Yeah, I'm going to rewind that.
What else, Doug?
Well, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the High Five City Games.
Yes.
And we talked about Suburbia.
Ah, yeah.
And I was writing up the blog post for that. We usually have a blog post the following Monday talking about the previous week's High Five list. And you can look at the cover of the game, and I have a little bit more of an explanation on why I liked it and why I put it in there for those of you that don't want to listen and just want to read. Which you wouldn't be listening to this now, so I think I just caught myself in the time loop.
I'm so confused.
Exactly. So Suburbia, as I was writing the description, there was something in there that I wanted to highlight that I just thought is a great concept of the game, which is in that game, you're putting hexagonal tiles out in your city, and they all kind of work off of each other and everybody else's city. And one of the things I came across while I was looking at it was, you can put a slaughterhouse in your city, which is awesome because you get income for every restaurant that's in the city.
Oh, wow.
Okay, which is great, except no one wants to live near a slaughterhouse, so your population goes down. So I thought that was kind of one of the cool things of that game is there's a lot of those type of mechanisms in the game that really feel thematic.
Okay, so just to recap, 2 weeks ago we talked about Suburbia and city-building games, and when you were writing the blog post, it ignited the inner nerd flame of your heart to the level that you just have to share about it, huh?
Yeah, I just thought
that's good.
I think that's a unique idea. If you're thinking about that game, that's one of the hidden Easter eggs of that game.
But that's the sign of a good game, right? No matter what the game is, it comes to you like a week later, 2 weeks later, where you see the nuances of it. Like,
And it fits together. You know, there's so many city games where it's just like, yeah, we get it. People don't want to live next to industrial areas.
Yep.
And commercial stuff brings in money. But I thought that was such an interesting way of, it brings in a lot of money. And I think, if I'm correct, it applies to every restaurant on the table.
That's cool.
So it's not even just in my city. If you build a restaurant, I'm making money because I've got the slaughterhouse.
That's cool.
But people don't want to live by it. So I just want to throw that
out there. Where's Suburbia in your collection here?
It is not in my collection right now. I'm waiting for the collector's edition.
There you go. All right. Of course you are.
Yeah. Leave that. Just
moving on.
Yeah, exactly. All right. The recommended game of the week.
This segment is sponsored by Funny Cars, a skill builder for Ticket to Ride First Journey. Have you ever heard a train that's far away and thought about what it was carrying? Have you ever been riding in a car when a train goes by and wondered what's inside that train? In this skill builder, your little gamers build their own train cars. This skill builder is for grades 2 to 4 and teaches children creativity, confidence, and group discussion skills. What are you waiting for? Find out what's in those trains already. The recommended game of the week. The recommended game of the week is a family-friendly game we think you should add to your collection, and it passes our stringent criteria for quality and content. This week's game is SOS Dino by Loki and distributed in the U.S. by Yellow, and that is Yellow with an I, as in I-E-L-L-O.
I-E-L-L-O.
That spells
that.
Yellow apparently.
It's a French company. I'll leave that there. published in 2018. It's for 1 to 4 players, takes about 25 minutes to play, and is for...
That's a lie. Keep going.
Faster? Longer?
Longer.
Oh, not that much longer.
Okay, I'm playing with a five-year-old a lot. She can stretch that thing out for 90 minutes.
There you go. You got dinosaur cute time in there. Ages 7 and up, and it was a 2018 Kinderspiel des Jahres recommended game.
Danke.
Yeah, that is the prestigious German Game of the Year, but this is a kid's version of that. And according to the publisher, SOS Dino is a cooperative game in which players have to move the cute dinosaur figurines to help them escape the flowing lava. On your turn, draw a random tile from the bag, place it on the board, and carry out the action printed on the tile. Throughout the game, move each dino to safety on top of the mountains while gathering the eggs scattered throughout the land.
And that's flowing lava, not flowing. Just
no,
the
it's
publisher
had. No, it's
had
flowing. Okay. I mean, yeah. If you draw some of the tiles out, it makes you draw another one.
Doug, I got to say, and not to anger this publisher, but that is one of the weakest descriptions of any
that
of
we've
the
had.
Boarding the publishers. Yeah, usually they're, you know, a little bit more enticing and drawing you in. That's about four lines of pretty limited copy there.
Well, I think this game depends a lot on table presence.
The game's awesome, man.
Yes.
You know, this
yeah.
is
so
a
if you
family
see this,
favorite in
you
our house.
See this set up on the table, there is no way that you will walk by.
Correct.
It draws you in. It's got four dinosaur toys, figurines that are cute and
yeah. Let's talk a little
quality.
Bit about what you do in the game.
Yeah, you are trying to rescue eggs that are on the board and get your dinosaurs up the mountains before they get consumed by lava.
Correct.
And there is lava flowing out of four...
Or meteors.
Yeah, four different... volcanoes on the game board, and as you draw a tile, there is each tile has lava flow on it with a set of flowers that attaches it to a volcano. That's the volcano that you need to extend. It's a little bit of a tile placement game, trying to keep the lava away from the dinosaurs, and if you have nowhere to place the lava, the volcano will explode and spew out in multiple directions. Does that cover it for you?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you, or what do you like about this game?
The game is a blast.
Outside
it's
of the
fun.
Excellent.
Oh,
components.
You got punny. excellent. Doug, at first I thought you had a collector's edition. How do you take such good care of your games? Don't you have like children that put the cardboard pieces in their mouth or?
Oh, no. Every kid that plays with me, plays games with me, has to put on the archival gloves so they don't.
This is in mint condition. I'm holding this dinosaur right now.
What are your kids doing with the dinosaur?
They're playing with them. The components are great. Here's what I mean. Like these pieces, if it's not in the game box, I'm going to go check Paw Patrol. See if it's in with the Paw Patrol. Then I'm going to go check and see if it's hanging out with the LOLs. Maybe they needed a dinosaur friend for the day.
Part of the Lion Guard.
The Lion Guard. Yeah, you're always a step ahead of me. That's the last place where I'll look for them. The game pieces are fantastic. You have the four dinosaurs. They're going out on an adventure. They have to collect their egg, and they have to get back to their mountain in the sky, as my kids like to call it. The thing about it... There's you have to figure out the movement because sometimes that lava flow is coming in a direction you can't walk across it. So how are you going to get around that lava flow? And I like that part of the game. I like the communication that happens. The interaction that the kiddos have in this game is fantastic. When you draw a tile from the bag and then you usually get to move any dinosaur except one. There'll be a dinosaur on the back of the tile with a slash running through it saying you cannot move that dinosaur. And so that has just a lot of fun factor that's in it. The other thing that I will say, and the game designer, if he's listening, he might be shaking his head right now, and I can't believe this, but this is a game that allows itself for very easy modification into house rules. Once kids learn how to play it, there's 15 different ways you can modify the game. So this is, would you consider this a cooperative? Would you consider this a competitive? How would you frame this? What type
of
game?
What do you mean 15 ways?
I'm going to go there, but just answer this question. This game is a
cooperative.
You're all working together, right? Well, my littlest doesn't like to play cooperative. She wants to take two dinosaurs, and I take two dinosaurs. And it's the first one to get your eggs and get home wins. And that's the thing where it's like, that's a five-year-old, man. That's pretty creative.
So let's reiterate to the listener that the game does not come with 15 different variants.
No. Let me be clear. This is a game that allows for young children to use their imagination and build off the rules that are currently there. There aren't a lot of board games in my personal collection or that we've talked about on this game that have that. It's a game where once you know the rules can be easily modified and adapted in a way that I didn't expect that they
were.
But I'm going to be like, this won't work. This won't work. Sat down and played it. It absolutely worked.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that I like about this game.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that stood out to me is this is a very, with the artwork and the miniatures, the figurines, this is a very fun theme for kids. So it's not overly complex, and it's very inviting.
Yep.
So I think kids see this on a table, and it's like, yes, I want to play that, not what's Dad trying to rope us into now,
right?
That type of thing. So that, you know, and then to fit with the theme of Loki as a company, you know, this is simple tile placement.
Yeah.
This is teaching your kids how tile placement works. So if you want to graduate to Carcassonne or what are some other ones that we've talked about? No, any tile placement game. I'm completely drawing a blank.
No, that's
like
all right,
an amateur.
Man. Amateur. Hey, wait, way to throw the pronunciation in there. Here's the thing, though, about the tiles. There's, when you pull them out, they have just this tiny little flower with a color on it, right?
Yeah, how's that work for that color blindness?
Hey, man, my kids know their colors, all right?
What about you?
I'm not going there. We've talked enough about my color blindness on the first set 15. I really struggle with this game and I don't want to slam because I'm the only person that I know that's ever run into this. And so how can I,
And the flowers aren't shaped differently, are they? That was the only thing I was wondering if that's how they got around it.
No, but if you play it enough, it's like the tiles in Dream Home that we reviewed the other week. If you play it enough, you can see the blues from the pinks. And
ultimately, you could just flip the tile over and find out.
See which dinosaur it doesn't go with. Yeah, but where I was going, when you get the tile out and you place it, you ultimately get to choose the orientation of how you set that tile because the lava will twist and turn occasionally. And that brings an added fun factor and excitement because although it could be my turn to place the lava, I can open it up to conversation to my other kiddos and say, how do you think I should place this?
Mm-hmm.
And allow them to see the metacognition that's going on in my brain. You know, we talked about that with Dream Home as well, where, you know, they can see how mom and dad are thinking and making decisions. And I'll say, well, actually, I don't think we should place a lava like that because if we place another one, we're going to have a dead end and explosion. And once the lava explodes, you have to take something off the board. And so I really like this game.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that we picked this game is there tends to be what I would think is kind of a sweet spot of like fourth to sixth grade, which is almost like the board gaming coming of age where once you get to that level, you're pretty good with most family games.
Yep.
And that's going to be a big wheelhouse for us. But we wanted to highlight a game that goes younger than that.
Younger than that, yeah.
And this says 7 and up, and you're playing it with, what, 5-year-old?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And she was playing when she was 4 and playing it. When we got back from that convention, she was playing it. Now, I'll say that. There's a big difference from when she was 3 to where she's at now as a 5-year-old. When she was 3, she was just playing with the dinosaur right alongside her lion guard. Now at 5, she can set up the game. We can play a game by the rules. And like I said, she'll modify and add in her own rules. It's also a game that she'll play with her dolls and her toys. She'll sit down and play the game all the way through. So that's the simplicity of the rules in the game. And I like what you're talking about there is it's an entry-level game into other family games. It really is.
Yeah, so don't think that you're going to get this as a recommended game and pull it out for the eighth graders and have a good old time.
I'm confused
why you're hesitating so much.
Because I still think it's a fun game, and it depends on how how much people love dinosaurs. And even though somebody may be an eighth grader or 14-year-old, they may have nieces and nephews or brothers and sisters and sit down and have a fun time with this. And the only reason why I say that is...
It's a great... I'm saying a group of all eight... Like the greatness...
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, the greatness of this game is that you can bring a five-year-old into the game playing experience and have the whole family.
And a lot of the games we've talked about, you're just not doing that. We're not doing that with Pandemic. Yeah. We're not doing that with Catan.
And a group of all eighth graders are not going to sit down and pull this off the shelf and say, this is the first game we want to play and have a super rewarding experience out of it.
No, that's a good point. The other thing that I will say, it took me a little bit while to do the teach and to really get it down because the rules, I'm not going to say that they're clunky, but sometimes when rules are translated, it brings a challenge. And the rule book is fantastic. There are great pictures, great diagrams. But once the game is taught, I'm going to talk out of the other end of my mouth from when we started the segment. It can absolutely be done in 20, 25, 30 minutes. So it is a fast-paced game, but it's one where if you're playing with very little ones, it can stretch out.
Yep. All right. So anything, any concerns you want to, I think we addressed most of the concerns, right? And move on to the skills.
Yeah, there were a couple unclear rules that you and I continue to talk about, but you know that's a board game.
Yeah, there's some things that are open for interpretation. I think we've clarified them online. You can look online and get answers. It's not an ideal situation. You'd love it to be clear right out of the thing, but as Michael said, with the amount of the room for modification or house rules on this game, I'm not too worried about it getting hung up on a rules thing. You know, make a decision, move along, and play the game.
As I build the mountains in the sky here, I know you want to get to school. Just hold on. Let me build, man. Let me build. I'm building on the air.
You can build all day long. Just use the right pieces.
All right. There's two things. If you are a dad or an uncle, a mom, an aunt, if you're new gamer enthusiasm and trying to bring people into the hobby, unbox this game. It is a punch-out delight. There are so many things to punch out and put together, and people have fun with it. So we had this experience with the game. But then putting the game board together is actually an enjoyable task. And in so many board games, that is part of the decision making of, do I have time to set that up and then put it away after? And with this, the pieces come together, the mountains, the volcanoes, they just come together nicely. They fit. The cardboard is set up so that where the dino mountains, and I apologize if I'm not using the right term, designer, but in my mind they're dino mountains. The dino mountains actually have like this little incut so that they sit on top of the board game and push the game down. We don't have another game like this in our house that you can play on carpet, you know, but this one you can really play it anywhere in the house.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I feel I had not noticed that until you said that, but this is a game where when you open up the box, everybody reaches in to grab a part to build.
Yeah.
Nobody sits on the sideline and is like, I wonder when this is going to...
What are they doing?
And nobody complains about it either. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'll set up this mountain. I'll set up this volcano.
Yep.
All right, well, on the surface, doesn't seem like there would be a lot of educational value in this game, but we disagree. So we have both created a list of five skills we think your kids and students can learn from a game like this. You want to get it rolling, or you want me to?
Yeah, man, why don't you lead off this week?
All right, well, the big one, spatial perception.
Yep.
This is the main one of the game. It's a game that strengthens a student's understanding of the spatial relationships with the objects in their environment as well as themselves. So navigating where that lava is flowing, where the dinosaurs are, where the eggs are, and keeping all of that stuff straight, making sure you limit the time that dinosaurs are on meteor spaces that that might get pulled out of the bag and instantly vaporize a dinosaur.
Well, and if the lava is traveling in a direction, there's a sense of urgency from multiple people because the game is a cooperative.
Yep.
If we have to move that dinosaur along. And seeing that and talking about it. Yep.
Yeah, making sure a dinosaur is not trapped in a spot.
Which can happen.
You know, you don't want to get it where they have to go all the way across the board to a different mountain. So there's a lot of spatial issues in this game that kids have a good time working through.
Awesome. I had that as well. I had it as not that we ranked them from 5 to 1, but that was my number one skill if I were ranking it in order.
There are certainly some games where a skill jumps off the page and you're like, well, that's a no-brainer. I don't even have to look any deeper to make sure that that one's on my list.
And then out of our social skill category, I have communication, a game that fosters an environment in which students must share information, news, or ideas. This is not a game where somebody is playing solitaire. When I grab a tile out of the bag, I have to communicate what the action is that I'm about to take, which dinosaur I am not allowed to move, and then some of the tokens actually have like a draw again. And so the younger gamers are talking to the older gamers about the symbols on the tile. There's a lot of interaction about which dinosaur should we get to the egg, which egg should we try to get to the mountain, all that stuff that's built in. So that was another skill that just popped.
Yep, and I have a similar thing as group discussion, that instigates the sharing of ideas, the solving of problems, and providing feedback within the group. All the same things that Michael said, just a slightly different phrasing. But yeah, there's definitely discussion and communication going on in this one.
Right on. What else?
Next one I have is risk management, a game in which students must identify, evaluate, and prioritize options to reduce the impact of unfortunate events or risks. So every time you draw a tile out of the bag, something bad is going to happen. The lava is going to move closer to a dinosaur. A meteorite might hit, those type of things. So you have to kind of watch where your lava is going and where your dinosaurs are at to avoid potential risks.
So have you ever lost when you've played?
Well, and that's something I guess we should explain in the game. There is no losing. It's just a matter of how many points that you get.
I would disagree. If you don't get all 14, I think you're a loser. No, okay.
Yeah. So, Michael says that to his kids every time. You get 14 or you're...
No dinner.
No dinner tonight.
You get points based on the number of dinosaurs and eggs that are left at the end of the game.
Rescued, yeah. I have not lost at this point.
Okay. We have scored very low. We have.
Well, if you're playing competitively.
Well, no. In the base game with the regular rules, not the Eliza rules. Okay. We have been destroyed. If the lava comes out early, if you have to pull multiple tokens, a meteorite comes out early, eggs gone, dinosaurs trapped, we got 6 points.
Yeah.
And I think that I bring that up because the way that we've defined risk management, some of those things you just cannot help.
No.
It happens. Yeah. And I actually like that about this game as well.
Yeah.
The luck factor, it's in there.
Yeah. Which is, that's what you want out of any cooperative game is if it's a cakewalk every time, that's not enjoyable. Then you're just, that's what they call in the accounting business is just pushing paper.
That's right.
You know, you're shuffling stuff from one side of the board to the next. And, so that bit of randomness and that little bit of luck that can happen and disrupt your plans is a sign of a good cooperative game to me.
Yeah. I've got Teamwork, Doug, a game that promotes a collaborative effort of a group to achieve a common goal in the most efficient and effective way. Yeah.
I put mine as cooperation, a game that encourages students to work together toward a common goal.
I also put cooperation.
Okay. Teamwork.
They're very similar. Very similar. Not the same. It's some of the games, especially the older adult games, I have to cooperate because it's in my interest. There's, those I words, whereas in this game, it is all about the we and what we're going to do. But those are, I'm down to just one skill left here, Doug. What do you have left?
My last one is problem solving, a game that develops a student's skill to find solutions for difficult or complex issues. Now, for adults, these are not complex issues. But when you're playing with a 5 or 6 year old, 7 year old, like the box says,
You are navigating traffic in a brand new city.
Yeah, you are problem solving. You are trying to figure out where to put that tile that is most beneficial for keeping your dinosaurs safe.
Yeah.
And so I think that the scale of thinking that's involved in solving those problems for the age group that this game is intended for, it's a really strong skill for them.
Lots of agreement here. I think if we ever have an especially contentious episode, like where you and I don't think we'd ever throw a punch, but if there's ever some hard feelings, we'll have to bring another Loki game. We'll go right back to a seven game aimed at seven-year-olds because there's just a ton of agreement. I think the skills do jump out of the game, and they're boiled down, and there's just a lot of simplicity in here. My last skill is integrity, and we have that as a core gamer skill, integrity slash honesty. And I just zoomed by my list here. Let me get it. There we go. That's where every game comes with a set of rules players must follow. This social contract is not legally binding, but the special pact students enter when playing a tabletop game encourages honesty and provides valuable lessons on integrity and honesty in a safe environment. Great example of that one, especially if you're playing with younger kiddos, 5, 6, 7-year-olds. They get a tile out of the bag. They see it right away. They know a dinosaur is going to be evaporated from the board when they place it. And what do? They go to throw it right back in the bag. And there's that, no, there's no undoing. We're not playing golf. We're playing a board game. You don't get to just go again. And I like that about this game. There are those subtle moments for honesty about, well, what tile did you pick out? And then there's just the jarring, no, we got that tile out. We're not redoing it. We're going to place it. That's part of playing a game. No, we didn't get all of our points.
That's
we
lost part of life.
Egg. Yeah, we lost
Let alone
egg.
A game. That's life. Yeah. Sometimes you draw the bad tile.
Yeah, sometimes you're the bug, sometimes you're the windshield, right? And I like how that is in this game for the younger kiddos and maybe for the grown men as well.
Yeah, yeah, I'm always trying to Guilty throw those charged. Back in. Yeah, well, you can't have this happen. So that is SOS Dino from.
Did you have another skill?
No, that's it for me.
Wow, we cleaned them up.
Yeah,
that was
we had a lot of crossover and similar ones. So
this is called the kindness episode.
Yeah. Sharing is caring. All right, so that's SOS Dino. Let's move on to the School of Gaming. The School of Gaming is sponsored by Production Probability, a skill builder for the modern classic Catan. Designed for grades 7 and up, Production Probability takes a behind-the-scenes look at one of the most popular board games of all time and provides students with the tools to understand basic probability and enhance in-game strategy. This 23-page skill builder uses a memorable and engaging method for introducing and reteaching probability. After completing the project, gamers improve their understanding of probability while making decisions involving wheat fields and forests.
The School of Gaming. In the School of Gaming, we discuss concepts, keywords, etiquette, and helpful ideas in the world of gaming and education. This week, we'll be talking about analysis paralysis and teaching other people's kids versus teaching your own kids.
All right, analysis paralysis. This was not originally on the list, but it came up last week, I think in last week's episode, that I'm like, we need to talk about that before it gets too late. So what is analysis paralysis? This is a gamer term, and it is basically when a gamer spends so much time making a decision that it slows the entire game down. And people are just waiting for that one person to make their decision. Now, there's kind of an age-old question with this as well. And then here's an analysis paralysis on the concept of analysis paralysis. Is this a designer problem or a player problem? Okay, is it the chicken or the egg?
Wow, great question.
Now, it's definitely a problem. It's a player problem when a person is running every possible combination in their head to make the most optimal move. If you've played enough games, there's a good chance you've played with somebody like this. It's like, well, if I did this and this and this and this, I'm going to get 5 points here. If I get 4 points there, if I do that over there, I'm going to get 3 points there. And it takes like 10 minutes for them to decide. And then right when they're about to move their piece, they say, well, maybe if I do. And then they redo the whole calculation over again. And everybody just wants to flip the table and shake that person and say, make a move. Though that is a problem, okay? A designer.
Hold on. Can we go on to another person problem, or will I ruin your train of thought?
No. If you got
another one is, you know, some people will go on a bender and they'll make very bad decisions. Well, I've been known over the last couple of years to go on a board game bender and play 13 games in a single day. And I've had the problem over here playing games. One was Role Player. Fantastic game. But I can remember where I was sitting, and I'm looking. If I do this, then I'll do that. But I need to place this dice, and if I do this, then I thought, I think about 7 minutes just went by, and it's my move, and Doug is waiting for me. So I actually run into this if I'm playing, you know, late in the game, like on the movies where they show people who've been playing poker for 3 days
straight.
Yeah,
but that's a different thing.
No,
that's,
it's the same thing,
no,
man.
No, it's not.
Because first game, I'm moving. I'm fresh. I'm good. Third game, I'm pretty good, too. You get into that 12th or 13th game of the day, I run into analysis paralysis. So I just wanted to bring that up as well.
So the designer can help alleviate this by basically providing decisions for all the players to calculate between their turns. So if there's stuff for people to be thinking while other people are taking their turns, people don't notice it as happening. And I think that's, you know, a good crunchy game that people have to think about. As long as I've got something to think about on my turn, there's a game called Five Tribes that is a really bad one for analysis paralysis. It doesn't have to be. It depends on the players. We'll get to that in a second. But in the way that that game works is the board state changes every turn. It's a very board-dependent game. So I make my move, and what you've been staring at for the last 3 minutes
changes.
Completely
shifts.
Changed. Yeah. And then you're saying, okay, now what do I do with this new information? So the whole turn you're sitting, well, if Michael does this and the board stays the same, I can do my move. But then when he disrupts that, then I have to rethink every possible scenario. So there can be game designs that are not friendly to preventing analysis paralysis. So what are the solutions? Now, in a classroom setting and playing with kids, setting parameters before the game
critical.
On turn length, those type of things, that's important and something that you can do. Is like, we're not going to take 10 minutes for you to decide what you're going to do.
Yep.
The other thing to me is, and this is really important because this is where I get to the where does it become, I don't want to say rude, but is the idea of reiterating that we're playing this game for fun.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not, you know, we're not, money's
it's your
not,
turn.
Money's not on the line. If you make a bad move because you rushed it and made a decision in 1 minute instead of 10.
That's all right.
Oh, well. Like, let's keep moving. Let's keep the game going along.
I've actually heard you.
We're not playing for keeps. Nobody's
talk
to gonna
yourself when you're playing a game and be like, well, I just have to make a move. I'm going to go. Almost like coaching yourself out of overanalyzing.
Yeah, because at a certain point, yeah, I mean, to what end?
Yeah.
It's like if a 35-minute game takes 2 hours to play and at the end of it I've won and everybody else at the table hates the game.
Yeah.
How good do I feel about my victory? It's like, great. You know, we're not playing for money. Nobody's going to die at the end of the game unless you're playing Russian roulette. And I usually try to end these with a question, but do you suffer from this? Do you have this issue?
I do have this issue after playing multiple games, especially if I've had to. So here's the setup. Long work week, and sitting down to play a whole table full of games, and I'm learning my sixth or seventh game of the day, and I'm enjoying the game. And when I'm enjoying, I'll just get lost in a lot of clutter in my head about how to move next. And what I tend to do is apologize to the group and let them know, like, hey, I realize I'm slowing you down. And I'll get one of two responses. It will be, that's okay, don't worry about it. That tends to tell me that they're doing something in their hand too, and I'm not taking that long. Or their silence. Then I know, okay, I just need to move.
Yeah.
So typically, I mean, we play a lot of board games together. I think you would be able to tell me if I suffer from this.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not to the point.
Typically, no. I know what I want to do. I like to keep things moving.
Yeah, and I think that's – and I wouldn't even put your – I think everybody has analysis paralysis on being tired and mentally fatigued. What I'm talking about is this is the first game of the night, and I'm calculating every possible – it's like the – Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind type of scenario, you know, that
Dr. Nash, it's your turn.
That's what I'm talking about. I don't think I suffer from this. I'm pretty quick to say, all right, let's do something, and it is what it is. You know, let the chips fall
and
where they may.
This is different from a disengaged gamer. This is different from somebody who doesn't want to be at the table and who's just going to bring their meh attitude to the table.
No, because those people take fast turns because they don't care. They just say, oh, I guess I'll do this.
Right, right.
This is somebody that's overly engaged.
And that's where I think if you're in a classroom setting, or if you're, you know, in any game setting and you run into this, some of the same suggestions that we had with alpha gaming, where you just temper down people's enthusiasm, I think can come in with analysis by paralysis too.
All right, so that is analysis paralysis. In case we talk about it in the future, you know what we're talking about. Tell me about teaching my own kids versus teaching other kids.
Yeah, this
outside of the fact that one is enjoyable and one not so much.
Well, which one? Which
exactly?
One?
You tell me.
Okay. This is such a great topic. You know, and I hate to date ourselves where we are, but we're recently coming out of March Madness. The NCAA tournament is a few weeks behind us now.
Date ourselves as if it doesn't happen every year.
And there were a number of teams that had, you know, father-son coaching combination. Syracuse with Jim Boeheim and Buddy Boeheim. And I said to Doug, I said to a couple others, there's nothing harder than coaching your own kids. I can coach anyone's child unless they are mine. Then logic, it goes out the window. My emotions are a little bit more charged, and it's really difficult to coach. And when I thought about that more, you know, I got into, well, the teaching is the same way. I mean, I can teach a classroom. I've talked about that. I feel confident and comfortable enough, and maybe not competent. I'm not going to use that word, but I'm confident and competent. Anyways, I can walk into a classroom and teach a group of kids. Lesson plan, no lesson plan, let's go. Build relationships, what's the content? Let's try to get better. But teaching my own kids, there's a different level of emotion that is brought to the table with teaching a board game. I really, you know, struggle at times with teaching my own children. And I don't take any pride in saying that. I mean, I've spent a lot of money. I've got a few different degrees here trying to learn how to teach. But this is an area where I have to grow and get better at. And right now, I really defer to my wife to teach board games and some of those other things. And this is a topic that I've put some time into trying to get better, especially as being a dad of daughters, having three daughters, and just understanding that it's not always about the skill that I'm trying to get across. A lot of times, it's about my presence and just being there and being open. And I don't know if folks can tell, but I'm a hard-charging person. I've never hit snooze a day in my life. When the alarm goes off, I'm ready to get the day started. Let's go, giddy up. And so when I'm working with my own kiddos on teaching a skill, I really have to take a step back than with other people's children, because my enthusiasm, it does not work with my own children. So I don't know if that's...
No, I think it's an interesting point, because I think everybody, any parent struggles with that. And I think it's different. There's so many different variations. I mean, you hit upon it. There's a level of the male to female dynamic of I've got female. I mean, I also have three daughters. And so the way that I treat them is different than, you know, they have different emotions of what they're perceiving from me, that type of stuff that you're trying to maneuver. And then your kids are all different.
Yeah.
I mean, my oldest daughter, I feel like I sometimes do. I just thought about this the other day, is I do a terrible job teaching when I'm teaching her the game, except I feel like there's a shorthand between us that, like, if I'm teaching my wife a game, I have to be very structured in how I do it and say, you know, do all those pointers that we talked about very early in the archives of the Game Schooler podcast. I have to go through that and say, all right, here's the winning parameters. With Emily, I feel like I'm skipping over beats.
Your oldest daughter.
Yeah, yep. I'm just saying, we do this, we do this, we do that, and she's picking up on it.
Yeah.
Like, she's almost got that gamer language. And then it isn't until after, like, geez, I think I did I mean, she got the game and we're playing it, but I feel like I just did a crummy job teaching it. And if I taught my wife that way, she would be so frustrated with me and missing so many steps. And that's just one dynamic of
but I think that also family goes members, with personality, you know? Type, and sometimes it's more is caught than taught, right? Because, yeah, you're speaking the shorthand, but she knows exactly what you're saying because she's played other games with you and been to the table. I'm going to flip the conversation now to teaching other people's kids. And I'm going to give some guidance and suggestions here, not based on scholarly research. That will be coming in a few weeks on other topics, but based on my own lived experience as a teacher and a coach. Number one, and I'm really talking about teenage audience, and I'll go 12 and up from there, but that's where the bulk of my experience is. You know, I have one whole year as a teacher in a kindergarten to eighth school, and I was a principal for a couple of years, but the bulk of my experience is in that high school adolescent range. Number one, be yourself, all right? Anybody who's around me knows that I am not the most sophisticated guy, and so I'm going to own that right out front. I'm also a fairly intense human being, and if I come to a table or if I'm teaching people's children, I'm just going to be me. Now, where it gets tricky, especially when you get in that 14 to 16 age range, and there are some big feelings, I do think, and I suggest, especially if they're friends, because if they are friends with you and these aren't complete strangers in your classroom, checking in with a parent and asking, am I okay to give direct feedback? Can I just be real direct here as I teach the game? And checking in with the parent before going to the kid, just like you would with a 4 to 6 year old. Yeah, they might be 10 years older, but you're just taking the temperature so you know, on that directness scale, how transparent and candid I can be here. So number one, teaching other people's kids, be yourself. Number two, own what you don't know. I made so many mistakes as an early teacher, years 1 through 3 especially, because I wanted everyone to believe that I was a good teacher. I made so many mistakes just because I wanted people to know that I knew what I was doing as a teacher. And I think when you're teaching other people's kids, there's so much more credibility that is built when you own what you don't know. And to give an example and to tie it back to board games here, I've said on this show, I'm not the best person when it comes to teaching games, but I can get you to a site on YouTube where you're going to watch a great video. In the example from the Harry Potter game that we talked about a few weeks back, the app has a fantastic tutorial for teaching that game. I'm not going to teach the first round in that Harry Potter. I'm going to show the 4-minute video and let the people who are closer to the gamer's age teach the game. So that's number two. Number three, treat each person as an individual. When you are teaching other people's kids, guess what? They're other people's kids. So would you ever in your life want another adult taking a shot at your own child? I mean, or even like at their dignity, embarrassing them, any of that. Come on, man. You hear the heat in my voice. No, you wouldn't want another adult doing that to your own kid. So it's just very important that when you are teaching other people's kids, sarcasm is not a tool. All right? That might be something you use with your own kids. Sarcasm can be taken a lot of different ways. And so you really have to treat people as individuals and check in with them frequently. Don't be afraid to check in with their parents. And then the other thing is just make sure you own what you don't know, because that's going to build the credibility.
All right, I think I'm terrible at teaching other people's kids.
No, man, you're a teacher. I've been telling you that. What you got to get in a classroom. You need to sign up to go be a sub.
No, thank you.
And get all different types of schools. Go to your local public school. Go to your local parochial school. Mm. Go find some school that only takes place out in the woods, and maybe you aren't an outdoors person. You need to go teach. Get in front of kids, man.
No, I'm good. I'm good. All right, well, that is the School of Gaming. Let's move on to the High Five Challenge. The High Five Challenge is brought to you by Exploring Ancient Wonders, a subject builder for Seven Wonders. Subject builders are a perfect tie-in to any game and provide valuable context before playing. From the pharaohs to Alexander the Great, historic leaders commissioned wonders, and ancient civilizations built a wide variety of magnificent structures. The board game Seven Wonders highlights the historic, must-see sites that shaped Western culture. In exploring ancient wonders, gamers explore the pyramids, bronze statues, temples, and monuments that comprise the Seven Wonders of the ancient world. If you're anything like us, you're constantly on the hunt for new games to try out. Each week for the High Five Challenge, I'll share a top five list of family-friendly games, and Michael chooses a topic. So what is this week's topic?
Haba Games.
All right, Haba Games. Haba is a manufacturer of toys and children's games. They recently, and I thought this would be, I was excited about this list based on the fact that we were talking about SOS Dino. So they're predominantly children's games. However, in the past several years, they have added more family games into their list. So let's just dive right in.
My favorite better be on your list, Doug.
It could be.
It better be.
All right. So there's one honorable mention, which is Dancing Eggs.
Oh,
have you ever played Dancing Eggs?
Do not know about Dancing Eggs. Talk to me.
So the only reason this is not on the list is because there are other great games, and because it has a little bit of that activity feel to it as opposed to a game. This is a dexterity game. You roll a dice, and they have very different things on it, but essentially you're trying to collect eggs. The eggs are giant rubber eggs. And so, for example, the first one might be you roll the dice, the first person to grab the dice off the table is going to get an egg.
Yep.
You roll another dice, it tells you where to put the egg. So you might have to tuck the egg under your chin. You might have to put it in your armpit, behind your knee. Trying to think where some, on your shoulder, in between your shoulder and your ear.
Targus? Can you put an egg between your targus? That's this little part of your
ear. You watch your mouth, right, sir. This is a family-friendly podcast.
No, man. I had a basketball coach that wouldn't let any hair below the targus. I say, you serious, man?
Isn't that what Doctor Who gets into, the targus?
I don't know.
Anyway, so as you get more and more eggs,
how do we get to targus from eggs?
Yeah.
All right, so you're tucking these eggs. What are you doing with them?
The first person that drops an egg ends the game, and whoever's still holding on to the most eggs wins. Now, there's one egg that's wood that's very slick, but that one's worth 3 points.
Ouch, man. Might break a toe.
Now, one of the things is that one of the dice is the first person to run around the table and get back to their seat gets another egg.
Oh, cool.
So now you can imagine people with eggs tucked into their chin, into their armpits, in between their arms. One is putting them between your knee. You put your knees together and it goes right in there, and you got to try and run around the table. So it gets pretty crazy, pretty fast, fun game, but an honorable mention.
So let's just back up real quick.
Yeah.
Haba is a company.
Haba makes
board games.
Yeah, they are a publisher, and they make board games and toys.
Similar to Loki, which was our recommended game of the week. So that's how we got on this topic for the recommended game of the week. So we're talking about games that Haba makes and publishes.
Yep,
great.
Correct.
What do you have on the list proper at five?
All right, number five is Karuba.
Yep.
So this was a spiel. Did we determine if this is a winner or just a nominee?
Nominee, I believe.
So Karuba is a tile placement game. The unique thing about this is everybody is playing the exact same tiles onto their board at the same time. So at the end of the game, everybody had the exact chance to score the same points.
Nominee.
All right.
2016.
By Rudiger Dorn as a designer.
Great designer.
So you're trying to move your adventurers along a path to collect treasure as quickly and as efficiently as you can. And like I said, everybody is playing with the exact same tiles. So it's interesting, at the end of the game, everybody has a different result, even though they all had the exact same. It's 100% a game of skill, which is kind of unique. The next game on the list is Rhino Hero. So this is a game where you take cards, and they're folded in half, and you are building a tower out of cards, and then moving this little wooden rhino up the building.
Doug, I feel like if you dressed up as a rhinoceros and a superhero for Halloween, you could be on the cover here.
Yeah, it's got cosplay rhinoceros superhero. So you win by being the first one to get rid of all of your roof cards and the roof or floor cards. and the floor card tells you what, how to place the cards on top of them. So you're trying to make it, and the first person to knock the stack over is when the game ends. Whoever has the least amount of floor tiles or floor cards left wins the game. Any cool. questions on that?
Nope.
All right. Next one is Dragon's Breath. This is a game where you have a stack of clear, what look like shower curtain rings in the center of the board. It's for four players. And each turn, the players go around the table picking one of the color of gems that are in this stack yeah. of shower rings. And then the person places or takes the shower ring off. All of the gems that fall that were in the color that you picked, you slide over to your corner of the board. And there's a little hole there. You keep it in your safe spot. They all fall down in there. It's a great game. And
another
it's,
game where about five-year-olds can play, right?
Yeah. And this is an awesome game to really see your kids think and process.
Oh, cool.
And admire that process. Or like my five-year-old, watching my five-year-old look at it and say, oh, I think more green gems are going to fall off and take the green one. And sure enough, that happens.
Yeah.
And you're like, gosh, how did you feel? Like, I can tell that that's going to happen, but how just to see, see that, or they're getting up and looking at it. And so it's a really neat thing to experience your kids watching them do that.
Cool.
All right. Number two is one of my daughter's favorite games. So I had to put it on the list. And it's a classic. I think they just came out with a 10th or a 15th anniversary, Animal Upon Animal.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't even told her that there's an Animal Upon Animal Unicorn edition at Barnes & Noble that she would go bananas over. Animal Upon Animal is you roll a dice and you are stacking animals on top of animals. Everybody has the same five or six wooden creatures that then you stack on. And if you knock the stack over, you take all of the animals that fall off. So you're trying to be the first one to get rid of all of your animals. I tried to avoid, there's a lot of stacking games in kids' games, and there's a lot of memory games.
Yeah,
in
I
kids.
Hate memory games. But
me as well. But these are all games that I enjoy, especially when you're talking about Animal Upon Animal, Dragon's Breath, and Karuba. Rhino Hero, sorry. Animal Upon Animal, Dragon's Breath, and Rhino Hero, all fun games to play with kids that I enjoy playing as well.
Cool.
Without having to dumb it down for myself,
right.
You know, which I think is an important thing for family games. And the last one on the list.
Adventureland!
Is Adventureland.
Yes, I love this game.
So this is a family-style game. The unique thing about this one is it's got three different ways to play it. In the box, three completely different games. The trick of the game is you have adventurers lining up on a grid. It's like a big spreadsheet kind of, but don't let that description discourage you or think that it has anything to do with as boring or number crunching.
Oh, it's great.
But you can move your adventurers as far along to the right or as far down as you would like. But you can never move them back up into the corner. So eventually all of the players are going to end up in the lower right-hand corner of the game board. And it's just a matter of how you're, you know, like I said, there's three different ways to play. So there's three different styles. I can't really explain how they all work.
Well,
they're all
kind of different. The complexity, you know, it's almost like a level one, level two, level three. Right.
Yeah. But each player, like the movement is so simple. It's like move your adventurers.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no more.
So this is Michael Kiesling and Wolfgang Kramer. And Michael Kiesling is the same designer of Azul.
Yep.
And this is just a fantastic game. It's one that, in all honesty, I love. It's in our collection. My wife doesn't care for it a whole lot. My children love this game.
She didn't care for one scenario.
What's that?
She didn't care for one scenario. You got to try her out on a different one.
But that's the thing. Not every game is for everybody. This is one that the first time I played it, I knew, hey, I want that. I want my family to play it. I like it.
Yep.
And it's one that I've played with friends, and friends have enjoyed it as well. So.
Yep. All right. Great. So that's my list of HABA games.
Great list, Doug.
HABA USA.
So backwards, we've got Karuba in 2016. That's a Rüdiger Dorn. Rhino Hero 2011, Dragon's Breath 2017, Animal Upon Animal, 2005, Adventureland from 2015 comes in at the number one HABA game. Great list, Doug.
All right, thank you. So that is going to do it for this week's show. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you can get notified as soon as we drop it on Friday morning, and keep listening. Like us on Facebook so you can stay up to date on what we're doing
there.
You
know what, Doug? Subscribing isn't enough. You need to put it in your auto download feed. It's time, people. We're 15 shows in. Like a lot of other podcasts would say, they're on their second season. We're just getting started.
And leave a review.
Yeah, we talked about good stuff today. Teaching other people's kids? That's not easy. Teaching your own kids? Even harder.
So, yeah, do those things. This is you.
Oh, this is me. All right, man. I was just having fun doing a little rant there at you. Follow us on Twitter at GameSchoolerU. You can also download your free copy of Naming a Virus for the Board Game Pandemic today at GameSchooler.com.
All right. So on behalf of Michael and myself, thank you so much for spending the last hour or so with us. We really appreciate it. You probably appreciated it too, but we do too.
Do you really appreciate it?
I totally do.
I do too, man. We got those listeners. Good work, people. Now get out there and start game schooling.